welcome back to Chapters at a Time. Today, we are starting a new book.
Yes, we are.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, I'm Mason. Sam's here, too.
Hello.
And we're starting Sea of Tranquility by Emily St. John Mandel.
That's right.
We watched a video on that pronunciation about 5 minutes ago, and we can confirm it's Mandel, just like sugar.
That was more for Mason's benefit.
Yeah. I have a hard time with pronouncing words, it turns out. A little background on Sea of Tranquility. It was written, like we said, Emily St. John Mandel during the COVID pandemic and was published in 2022. And our last book was, what genre? Just general fiction? What would you...
I think it's like general fiction.
General fiction. Well, now we're diving into the world of scientific...
Yes.
Gosh, long day. Science fiction, or
scientific fiction.
Fiction. You know, that's what the kids are calling it these days. It's also labeled as speculative fiction, and I don't exactly know what we're going to speculate about. We covered the first,
I don't know,
section, if you will, titled Remittance 1912.
Yeah. And so the way that this works is we're given like a title, chapter, name, and then the year that it takes place on, like, the table of contents. And the first year is Remittance, and it's in 1912. And then the next chapter is Morella and Vincent, which jumps to 2020. So naturally, there's going to be some time jumps throughout this.
Yeah, and our journey goes to... Oh, we get a second remittance.
We do.
Our journey goes to 2203. However, in the end... We get a second remittance in 1918, 1990, and 2008, and that's good, because I left this first section with quite a few questions. But before we get into all of that, we gotta give Emily her flowers, and this book was on Barack Obama's summer reading list in 2022.
Oh, really?
And it seems that there is an HBO TV adaptation in development.
Really?
We do not have a production date yet, but we have that to look forward to, maybe. I generally don't like TV adaptations of books that I read. Movies somehow do better, and they fall well short of the mark most of the time.
I think, yeah, I agree. I agree with that. I think sometimes you can pull it off, but the majority of the time it's just disappointment, just because the book has a lot more detail, typically. Yeah.
So, do we want to go straight into the narrative?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, well... We're introduced to our main character in this first section, Edwin St. John St. Andrew.
Yes.
Double last name, and his first last name is the same last name as the author, I'm sure you noticed. And that just brings up the first point of it seems this book is going to have a lot of parallels with her experience in the pandemic.
I would agree with that. I think there are some things that are just covered within the first chapter. That I think you picked up on as well as I did, where it seems very on the nose for that time period, or very like topical, maybe not in the most direct sense, but definitely paralleling like similar sentiments and ideas that were in the air at that time.
Right.
And still are.
It's a period piece of sorts. but yeah, when we're first introduced to Edwin, he's the second youngest son. Right?
He's the youngest.
He's the youngest son of an English nobleman, and he has decided to move to Canada. There's some hint that he is in exile.
Yeah. I mean, we pretty much start off the book, we find out Edwin, he's 18 years old, and as he so lovingly puts it, he's been exiled to Canada. Although he refers to it as being mildly melodramatic, it does seem like he's been exiled to Canada, just because he didn't have a whole lot of say in the matter.
Right, and... We are sort of hinted towards what led to his exile, and we get a full flashback of that later, so we'll get to it when we get to it.
Yeah.
But Sam, have you ever taken a trip to a city with, like, no prior knowledge of what to do in the city?
Like, just showed up in a city?
Basically.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. That's basically what, you know, John's going through, or Edwin's going through. Man, Edwin St. John is going through in Halifax.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, he's just, like, meandering.
Yeah.
Learning how to paint.
I mean, learning how to sketch, having a good time. I think that's naturally what you should do. I think it's Too much stuff is like regimented and planned out. It's good just to wander and meander.
Yeah, he's just buying random things, watching the bay. And we get an anecdote that Edwin is capable of ambition, but he can also be content doing basically nothing.
Yeah. I really like that line in the book. Edwin is capable of action, but is prone to inertia. Just the whole idea of, like, he can do stuff, but unless he's pushed to do it, he's going to do nothing. Which becomes quite apparent, because he pretty much, after he gets off his boat, he's in Halifax,
right?
And he just pretty much hangs out for the next 6 months on a bender, right?
Wait, actually, he gets off the boat in... Oh, man. This is embarrassing. Yeah, I guess it is Halifax. Where does he go in Saskatchewan?
I think he goes to Saskatchewan after he leaves Halifax on his way out west. It's like while he's going through the Rockies, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. So this is kind of our first rather on-the-nose parallel between the pandemic and Edwin, where I think we all dealt with this of, I can just lay on the couch for the next 6 months, or I should actually be doing something really productive right now. But, you know, it only goes one way or the other. So I think that's really where the inspiration there comes from. Then a fellow Englishman comes along, cut from the same aristocratic cloth, Reginald. And we don't get a whole lot of information about Reginald. No. At all in this section. But he heads to Saskatchewan to buy a farm, which is a pretty awful farm from what I can tell.
Yeah. Yeah, because Reginald just got off the boat. He's ready to go right away to go buy a farm, and that kind of makes Edwin feel a little bit bad because he's just been hanging out, doing nothing for 6 months. And then all of a sudden here's this young guy who shows up, and he's like, let's get going.
Yeah, so they go to Saskatchewan, they're in the ominous farmhouse, and they basically realize that neither of them know anything about farming, and so they're like, let's just get drunk for 6 months.
Yeah.
And that's basically it. That's, like, all that happens in Saskatchewan, other than Edwin is unsettled by the plains, which is a recurring theme of Edwin in basically any setting that he's in.
Being unhappy?
Yeah, unhappy and just unsettled by nature. And then Edwin decides to depart for British Columbia.
Yep. Head over to Victoria.
Right. He says he doesn't want to drink as much, is captivated by the beauty of the Rockies.
Of course, on his train ride out there.
And then he meets up with the middle brother.
Middle brother's friend, Thomas.
Yes. And the middle brother's name is Niall, just for the record.
Who's currently in Australia.
Right. We don't know. Do we know what he's doing in Australia?
He says from his letters he seems to be happy. I think he's in the mining industry.
Oh, that doesn't sound like happy work to me, but...
From his letters he seems happy, apparently. Okay. So,
So Thomas is potentially involved in some shady business, although there is no elaboration there. And also, for context... Since this is in 1912, Canada gained legal autonomy within the British Empire in 1931 because of the Statute of Westminster, and Canada did not become fully independent until the Constitution Act of 1982. And as he's riding out to Victoria, we get another hint about his radical beliefs, because he looks at the tall pines and the wilderness as a whole, and he's like, how can Britain possibly claim ownership of the wilderness? Mm-hmm. Which introduces a key point in this first section, which is essentially the condemnation of colonialism, which I think everyone can really agree on at this point.
Well, you'd like to think so,
yes. You'd like to think so. And that's when we get our flashback to Edwin's faux pas at the dinner party. So, Sam, what happens at the dinner party?
So, basically, we have a flashback to why he is basically getting exiled, or why he thinks it's the case. And basically what it ends up going down is he's at dinner. He's there with his mom, his father, his older brother, Gilbert, who Gilbert's presumed to be the inheritor of the entire family estate. So there's really nothing much that Gilbert needs to do or worry about. His life's pretty much taken care of. And Edwin's just there with the family. And there's some backstory. We learned that the father is was in the Navy or still in the Navy. That's probably where the family gets some of its prestige. The mother spent time growing up in British India. And she remembers her time there favorably. She apparently
her aya,
and who I take it to be like her nanny.
Yeah, that's a nanny
of sorts. In India, and she just really liked the colors. She really enjoyed being there. She just didn't like how hot it was. But it seems like she has a special place in her heart for India and what her life was like there.
And that's when it really comes out, right? Because she talks about the oppressive heat.
Yes, the oppressive heat. And then, as Edwin puts it, which I really like, he says, sometimes you don't know you're going to throw a grenade until you've already pulled the pin. Because then out of nowhere, he just kind of brings up, oh, well, they're probably not oppressed by the heat as much as they're oppressed by the British. Which then kind of causes everybody to stop at dinner.
Everyone's a little on edge after that one, for sure.
It seems like Edwin was ready just to pick a fight. And then that just doesn't go very well with the dad.
Right. He says, you know, we're bringing civilization to the barbarians. And Edwin replies that the Britons were probably not happy when William the Conqueror, their ancestor some years down the line, invaded England in 1066. And then Edwin decides it's a good play to refer to their ancestor as the maniacal grandson of a Viking raider.
Yep. And then that just kind of like sent the father over the edge. And then he's like, oh, everything, well, we're bringing civilization to these places. And then Edwin's like, it seems like they've been doing fine for thousands of years.
Yeah, yeah.
Before we ever arrived. And whoever gave us the authority or the right to rule over these people. And then the father doesn't seem to like that. And then basically says, look here, kid, everything in your life is because you are the grandson of, as you so poignantly put it, a Viking raider. And then what happens after that?
That's when his father says, go to your room.
Yeah.
And,
and then basically his older brother comes up and says, hey, by the way, you're going to Canada.
Yeah, he said, you're going to Canada. And he's like, oh, I was already planning on going to Canada in 6 months or next summer or whatever he says.
Yeah, and he's like, no, you're going next week.
Yeah, he's like, see ya, buddy.
And as your father, as our father put it, you are not to return to England or keep him out of England.
Right. So that's why he's in Canada now.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's doesn't seem like much discussion or anything. Just, hey, colonialism's pretty bad. The dad getting kind of pissed and he's like, all right, well, I'm never going to see you again. You go to Canada.
And that's where we get the section title remittance, because you know, he, that's the conditions of his remittance, is to not come back to England
basically.
So yeah, that's why he's in Canada with no plans. And then we flash back to Victoria, and Edwin and Thomas go out to the Union Club. And man, I don't know, I have some comments about the writing as a whole. I think it's a bit choppy at times, but I loved this part. This part was incredible to me because you could just feel the awkwardness, or everyone's kind of been in a situation somewhat like this where you are just not at all interested in whatever's going on at whatever event. And then absolutely, someone else that you're with is totally buying in and you're just like, man, this is painful.
I would agree. On that topic, I think it's within this chapter, we've also been in situations where we're trying to have a conversation with somebody or like relate to people and they're just not letting it happen for whatever reason. And they're kind of looking down at you from whatever high point they're wanting to stand on.
Right. And this place of Second Sons is looking down on Thomas pretty hard.
Absolutely.
They're entertaining him, but basically they're not letting him in the boys' club.
Yeah, Thomas is trying to go into business with somebody, so he's trying to make himself appear amenable, agreeable, and they're just not having it. They're just like going along with it, but they're not going to let him in. And I really kind of like how the author explains this or writes about this, how she says, they're not interested in outsiders, even outsiders from the correct country with the correct ancestry and the correct accent who have gone to the correct schools. It's just kind of like there's nothing about this guy which could allow him to relate to these individuals in Victoria.
Right.
He's trying to like relate to it. It's like he has the right accent, he has the right schools, he has the right ancestry, but none of that's good enough.
No,
it's
way
like,
to get the foot in the door.
No, no. There's a gate there, and they're putting the gate in place, and it doesn't matter what it is. It's like you're too young, you haven't been in country long enough. It's no matter how you want to define or draw the line in the sand, he's not going to be good enough.
And thankfully, Thomas does take the hint. And so this is when both men are pretty put off by Victoria as a whole, and they decide to take the boat up to Vancouver Island, where they start staying at the settlement of Kayette.
Kayette, yeah, just up the island from Victoria. Because apparently Thomas has a lead on his friend's uncle's...
I thought it was just his uncle's logging company. Maybe it's his friend's uncle.
I think it's his uncle's logging company. Anyway, some like distant relation for Edward, our main character. It's his brother's friend's uncle's logging company. And he's just going to join him up the coast because he has nothing better to do.
Yeah, but then when he gets up there, Edwin backslides into inertia again and just starts painting things and playing chess while Thomas goes to work.
Yeah, he's not very good at chess. He just likes to play chess because he likes the way... he likes the symmetry of the game.
Yeah, respect.
And he just walks around basically watching the tides, sketching, and keeping to himself mostly.
And then we get another scene of him on the boat on the open water where he's like, oh God, the water makes me uncomfortable like the plains. Yeah, this is when you start getting the feeling that the indigenous population is going to play a role, because as they're taking the boat up, he sees like totem poles and fishing boats going out. And sure enough, he does go for a walk and comes across two indigenous women. And we get kind of an awkward scene.
Yeah, very much so.
Because does he even try to strike up conversation at all?
He basically just says hi to them, and one of them says hi back, and the other one just gives him a cold shoulder, and then it seems like Edwin wants to dwell in the conversation and see where it can go, but as they walk past, he realizes the moment has passed, and that was it. So it seems like he has some desire to relate to other people, or at least... find a girl, I guess.
Yeah, and if I remember this correctly, there was some sort of internal monologue where he wanted to express his beliefs and kind of, not necessarily console, but relate or something, or...
I would say almost explain his positioning, because
like
whenever
level with them, yeah.
Yeah, because he comes in on the boat, the other people are canoeing around them, and they're rolling in on some steamboat, I assume, and they're giving them, just looking at them strange, and then he rolls up to this village, he finds these two young ladies who I assume he has a certain attraction towards, and he basically wants to confess that he thinks colonialism is bad, so he wants to keep on that note, but he can't talk to them about why colonialism is bad, because then the next logical question he points out is, well then why are you here if you think colonialism is bad? And he doesn't really have a response for that.
Right.
So that's kind of funny, because he doesn't really seem to be happy in the plains, he doesn't really seem to be happy in the ocean, but it also doesn't seem like he's very happy with his own position in life, because it's not of his own making. He was kind of sent there by his family, and it wasn't of his choosing. So even if he thinks colonialism is bad, and the whole point why he's been sent here is because he thinks colonialism is bad,
there's nothing he can do.
There's nothing he can do, because from the outside perspective, it looks like he's just a colonist. So it's a kind of a tricky position to be in. For him, which...
I guess he has a good reaction, right? He's like, well, I guess I'm just going to walk into the forest.
Yeah. So then he decides he likes to walk into the forest, or he doesn't like walking into the forest, but he feels
he's,
the need
again,
to.
Again, off-put. This dude needs to stay indoors.
Stay indoors? I just think he's unhappy with whatever position he's in. Like, he's not... He doesn't relate to his family well, obviously. He doesn't like physically where he's at. and then he doesn't like the circumstances of his own life, and he really doesn't have any direction. He's like, oh, I'm going to go start a farm, and then that fails, and he's like, how do I farm? And the guy he was with is like, oh, you sow, you reap what you sow, and he's like,
what? Facts.
I mean, that's true, but he's like, I don't know what to do with that information. That's useless.
He's like, yeah, everyone knows this.
Like, okay, that's, and, so yeah, he just takes to walking in the forest, walking in 100 meters, because he likes to count it off. Seems like he's very mathematically oriented, or like very regimented in a sense.
And this is where we really start to get some build-up, or we at least have a few questions moving forward, because it's been a pretty mundane chapter, a lot of setup, and I hope every chapter isn't like this, where there's a lot of setup, and then we're left with kind of like a cliffhanger, and then we just jump a couple hundred years into the future. But we'll get to those questions in a second, because Edwin takes those few steps into the forest, realizes he's being watched, and then the observer, Priest Roberts, identifies himself and says he is just filling in for the usual priest, and then moves along, right? Then we get two super short subchapters where there's a flash of darkness and violin notes and then some crazy sound.
Yeah, he likens it to being inside of a cathedral. So right after the priest leaves, he's still standing there, presumably, and something strikes him between the violin music, him standing in a cathedral, and then he just kind of blacks out, and we find him standing in the water, like, vomiting and puking.
Yeah.
In the next chapter. No explanation of how he got there, just saying that he likes the shocking cold, like, feel on his legs, but that's all we have to go on.
So, yeah, after waking up on the beach, vomiting, he's like, well, I guess I'm going to go to church now. So he goes up to the church and finds Roberts. And then during all of this, he recalls a time where he fainted in grade school and it's like, okay, maybe I just fainted again. But then once he starts questioning Roberts about when he came and when the other priest left, he starts getting really suspicious of Roberts in general because he's like, hold on. There's only so many people here. No boats have come or gone. There's been no talk of anyone coming or going. And he asks Roberts how he even got there. And
Roberts kind of responds by changing the subject.
Yeah. And then, yeah, he just says that he turned around after he started walking away and saw Edwin, in quotes, see something that was not visible to him being Roberts.
While he was in the forest, yeah.
Right. And then Edwin's like, you know, something is afoot here, gets up to leave, and then sees the usual priest
walking up the steps of the church.
And then he turns around and Roberts is gone.
Yep, and that's the end of the first section.
Right. So leading theory, Roberts is an alien. Right.
You think he's an alien? I think he's a time traveler of sorts. I mean, naturally the book jumps forward in the future and not, and the guy just dips. He's trying to be an imposer. Or not. Yeah, he's trying to be, like, he's an imposter of the priest. Like, he's trying to, you know what I mean?
Why is he being an imposter of the priest?
We don't know.
On top of that,
maybe it's whatever happened with the violin music and the feeling like he's in a cathedral and blacking out. Like, maybe he saw something. Maybe his conscience went somewhere. Maybe he went through, like, a temporal wormhole to the future. I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll get somewhere down the line in this book, and we'll be introduced to Roberts. And Roberts is like, I gotta go all the way back in time to where this all started. And we get some Back to the Future action. But then it's like, I don't know. I still have questions as to, yeah, what are Robert's motivations? That's the obvious question, right? One thing that I thought was a little bit more subtle was, okay, we get this one-off line about Thomas being involved in shady business. And then now he's working for a logging company. We really don't have any more interactions between the two guys once they get to whatever island. and Kayette. And it doesn't seem like we're going to get any answers there.
No, or at least not within this century, because the next chapter takes place in 2020.
Right.
Something that I thought was a little bit interesting is during the family argument, the question, while he's talking about colonization and why colonization is bad, the question comes up to him of, oh, well, are you religious or are you Christian? And then Edwin makes the point of, I don't really know what I am. And then I find it kind of fascinating that the whole story relates back to him meeting up with a Catholic priest on this island, or the imposter priest, and that's how the story progresses. So maybe there's some aspect of, like, religious perspective in this story. I'm not really certain, but it definitely seems like that could be a reoccurring theme, or maybe, like, a plot-driven, or a device used to drive the plot. I'm not sure. What do you think?
As far as the religious undertones, I don't know.
Don't know.
Because, wait, who did you say asked him?
I think it was his mom. Because it was at the family dinner, and then he basically said, oh, I don't really know what I am. And then everybody just didn't really know how to respond to that.
I don't know. I mean, I had other questions about, and I don't think these are questions we're ever going to get an answer to, but I had questions about why were his parents so, I guess, committed to England when they didn't even move there until their, like, 20s from India, you know? You would think, or at least I like to think, that if I was, oh yeah, there it is, if I was a colonizer, right?
Sure.
Or born into a colony, I suppose. I like to think that after my entire childhood up till my 20s, I would maybe relate more to the local culture than the, homeland culture.
Yeah.
But they seem very attached to it, even though there is this fondness for India. So, I don't know.
I don't know. It definitely seems like they have an affinity for India. I think his family comes from a lot of different backgrounds. And has an overall interesting story. I don't really know what else there is to go on.
Yeah, we really don't have a lot. We kind of just have to push, like, it off until next week.
We have time traveler priest dude, or time traveler alien imposter priest dude, Robert, and him blacking out in the middle of the woods listening to violins in cathedral, and then that's it, basically.
Yeah, and we have confusion around Thomas, and then, of course, you have to wonder, what was the point of, who was it, Robert? Who's the guy that he went to Saskatchewan with?
Reginald?
Yeah, Reginald. Yeah. So, what was the point of Reginald, other than...
I don't know.
Some, like, a midway point.
What do you think of the author's writing style so far?
It's okay.
It's okay? Are you a fan? Do you have any critiques or comments?
Or is mostly it too- just that it's, like, it's definitely a quick change from Cormac McCarthy. It's a lot different than old Cormac.
Yeah.
So
We're not getting any long monologues or anything like that. It's very brief, short discussions, or he spent in like 4 or 5 pages, he spent 6 months in Saskatchewan, and that's basically all that's written.
In, yeah, two sentences, 6 months passes.
Very brief. Very brief interactions. We don't get any, like, long character interactions. I guess the family dinner and the interaction with the priest, but even those seemed a little bit, like, short, in my opinion.
I do wonder how much this book is going to focus on individual characters as a whole, or if it's just going to be kind of a thematic deep dive. Like, I wonder if we're really going to build out any characters super significantly. I don't know how you can possibly have a successful novel without doing that, but... Yeah. kind of like the three body problem, which similarly jumps in time. Maybe we'll get flashbacks.
I don't know. I'm definitely curious. I mean, it's got me hooked. I'm curious why he's hearing violins. I want to know why are there a whole bunch of time jumps 200 years at a time. But I really don't know what to expect from this book, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah, same.
I have no idea where this is going.
Yeah, I try not to read too much about the plot. You know, I tried to get the background information, but it's kind of touchy, right? Because you don't want to spoil the whole thing.
No. Absolutely.
So, I think that's all I got.
I think that's all I got as well.
Okay, well, stay tuned for episode 2. As you may have guessed, the next episode will cover Morella and Vincent, 2020.
That's right.
So, until next time.